Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Invalid Search Warrants and Qualified Immunity Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 5, 2011, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Messerschmitt v. Millender. This case presents two questions. The first is whether police officers are entitled to immunity from suit when their search of a gang member's residence for firearms and gang-related items was based on a warrant that the court later determined to be overtly broad and not reasonably supported by probable cause. The second question is whether the standard applicable to immunity determinations in such circumstances is problematic and should be altered. To discuss the case, we have Joshua Skinner, a member at Fanning, Harper, Martinson, Brand, and Kutchin, PC. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Skinner.
On Monday, December 5th, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Messerschmitt v. Millender, a case out of the Ninth Circuit involving the question of when a police officer can be held personally liable for an alleged violation of the Fourth Amendment based on the execution of a warrant that was approved by a magistrate judge. This case started with a domestic assault on Shelley Kelly by her boyfriend, Jerry Ray Bowen. Bowen had physically assaulted Kelly on various occasions. Kelly ultimately decided to move out of her residence in order to end the relationship. Fearing for her safety, Kelly asked sheriff's deputies to conduct a civil standby while she retrieved her belongings. While Kelly was in the midst of removing her belongings, however, the deputies received a call and left the scene. With the deputies gone, Bowen attacked Kelly, attempted to throw her off a second-story landing, bit her, and tried to drag her by the hair back into the residence. Kelly managed to escape from Bowen and ran to her car. Bowen followed, holding a sawed-off shotgun, and threatened to kill Kelly if she tried to leave. Kelly managed to drive away by lying down on her side in the vehicle and slamming on the accelerator. As Kelly drove away, Bowen fired a shot at her, blowing out the car's left front tire. Kelly kept going, and Bowen chased the car, firing and missing four times. Kelly reported the attack, and it was assigned for investigation to Kurt Messerschmitt, a sheriff's detective. Messerschmitt interviewed Kelly and another witness who corroborated her account. Kelly identified Bowen from a photo lineup, provided Messerschmitt with a description and picture of the sawed-off shotgun, and told Messerschmitt that she believed Bowen was hiding out at the home of his foster mother, Augusta Millender. Messerschmitt did further research and determined that Bowen was a known member of a street gang and had an extensive criminal record, including numerous assault and weapons charges with several felony convictions. Under California law, Bowen's felony convictions made it a crime for him to possess any firearms, and, in addition, possession of a sawed-off shotgun was a crime at all times. Messerschmitt prepared a search warrant and affidavit, recounting the results of his interview with Kelly and of his investigation, as well as his extensive experience in gang-related criminal activity. He submitted the warrant and affidavit to fellow petitioner, Sergeant Robert Lawrence, as well as a lieutenant, a deputy district attorney, and ultimately, the magistrate judge who gave the final approval for execution of the warrant. The warrant authorized the arrest of Bowen, as well as the search and seizure of items tending to establish the identity of persons in control of the premises, that is, of the Millender's residence, all firearms and firearm-related items, and articles of evidence showing or relevant to gang membership. The Sheriff's Department's SWAT team served the warrant, but did not find Bowen or the sawed-off shotgun. However, the SWAT team did seize a shotgun owned by Millender, a box of ammunition, and a letter from Social Services addressed to Bowen at Millender's residence. Millender, as well as her daughter and grandson, all residents at that house, brought suit against the various defendants, including the county, the Sheriff's Department, Messerschmitt, and Lawrence. The parties filed cross motions for summary adjudication on the validity of the arrest and search warrants. Messerschmitt and Lawrence presented two arguments in favor of summary adjudication. First, they argued that the warrant did not violate the Fourth Amendment because there was probable cause to support all of the provisions of the warrant. Second, they argued that even if the warrant did violate the Fourth Amendment, they were entitled to immunity because their actions were objectively reasonable in light of clearly established law. This second argument, which is the focus of the appeal, relates to the doctrine of qualified immunity. From its roots in the common law, the doctrine of qualified immunity has been developed by the Supreme Court to protect public officials in the exercise of their duties when the law is unclear. The qualified immunity doctrine is a recognition of various competing interests, including questions of fairness and the imposition of monetary penalties when the law is unclear, the importance of encouraging public officials to be vigorous in the fulfillment of their duties, and, on the other hand, the fact that public officials sometimes violate individual rights and that the only effective remedy for those violations might be through a lawsuit against the public official. In general terms, the Supreme Court has previously held that public officials will not be held personally liable unless their actions were objectively unreasonable in light of clearly established law. After the parties in this case filed their cross motions for summary adjudication, the district court concluded that the search and arrest warrants were generally valid, with the exception of the provisions authorizing the search for all firearms, firearm-related materials, and gang-related items. The district court also denied qualified immunity to Messerschmitt and Lawrence. Messerschmitt and Lawrence took an immediate appeal from the denial of their entitlement to qualified immunity. A panel of the Ninth Circuit reversed in a 2-1 decision, holding that it was not clearly established that the firearm and gang-related provisions violated the Fourth Amendment. Millender petitioned for en banc review, which was granted, and in an 8-3 decision, the en banc court affirmed the denial of qualified immunity. Messerschmitt and Lawrence then sought review by the Supreme Court. Messerschmitt and Lawrence contend that the Supreme Court should reverse the decision of the Ninth Circuit and emphasize that police officers should only be denied qualified immunity based on egregious abuses. They point to a number of factors that they believe indicate that qualified immunity is appropriate in their case. First, they point to the fact that the officers submitted the warrant and supporting affidavit to a deputy district attorney as well as a magistrate judge, and that both approved the warrant. Messerschmitt and Lawrence contend that their submission of the warrant and affidavit to the deputy district attorney and magistrate is strong proof that they were acting reasonably. Second, the officers contend that they are entitled to qualified immunity because even if certain portions of the warrant were overly broad, the overly broad provisions did not expand the scope of the actual search. Third, the officers contend that facts outside the text of the warrant and affidavit, namely the fact that Bowen had prior felony convictions, established that there was probable cause to support the warrant. Finally, the officers contend that it was not clearly established that the provisions of the warrant in question were overly broad. One question that was not directly raised in the officers' petition for review was the question of whether the search and seizure actually violated the Fourth Amendment. The questions presented focused on whether the law was clearly established, not on whether there was an actual violation of the Fourth Amendment. In their briefing on the merits, however, the officers argued that there was probable cause to support the warrant, and so it's unclear what the Supreme Court will do with this issue and whether they will address this question or whether they will just stick to the questions as they were presented. Messerschmitt and Lawrence were supported by two amicus briefs, one filed by the Texas Attorney General's Office on behalf of the state of Texas as well as 26 other states. Also, the Department of Justice submitted a brief in support of the officers. Both briefs argued that prior Supreme Court precedent created a standard that is deferential to police officers when they are acting pursuant to a warrant approved by a magistrate. A Deputy Solicitor General from the Department of Justice also participated in the oral argument. The Millenders, in turn, contend that the fact that the officers submitted the warrant and affidavit to supervisors and a magistrate do not insulate them from liability because the warrant was, quote, so lacking in indicia of probable cause that reliance on the warrant was objectively unreasonable. Largely leaving aside the officers' claim that overly broad provisions of the warrant did not expand the scope of the search, the Millenders focused on Messerschmitt's and Lawrence's claim that the court could look beyond the text of the warrant to determine its validity. Finally, the Millenders also argued that the law was clearly established because the general rule requiring detailed warrants and prohibiting general warrants made the law clear enough that they should be denied qualified immunity. The Millenders were also supported by amici. In their case, the National Rifle Association and the American Civil Liberties Union both filed briefs in support of the Millenders, arguing that the law was clearly established. During oral argument, Timothy Coates, counsel for Messerschmitt and Lawrence, received close questioning from Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg as to whether the warrant was supported by probable cause. Justice Sotomayor focused on the provision permitting the search for all firearms, rather than a more limited search for the sawed-off shotgun used in the assault on Kelly. Justice Ginsburg expressed concern that the provision permitting search for and seizure of gang-related items could not be supported by probable cause, because Messerschmitt had stated in his deposition that he had no reason to believe that Bowen's assault on Kelly was a gang-related crime. Justice Breyer, in turn, questioned whether it would be appropriate to look outside the text of the warrant to determine its validity, and further questioned whether such an examination would be likely to benefit the officers. Chief Justice Roberts intervened in the discussion to clarify that the question, as the Chief Justice understands it, should be whether it was reasonable for Messerschmidt to take the warrant and affidavit to his supervisors and ultimately to the magistrate. The questioning then moved into more general questioning by Justice Sotomayor and Scalia regarding how the search for gang-related materials might relate to the assault investigation. Mr. Coates attempted to provide an explanation, but none of the justices seemed particularly satisfied with his explanation. The Deputy Solicitor General for the United States spoke next, emphasizing the federal government's argument that, except in the most extreme cases, the fact that an officer procures a warrant from a magistrate should insulate the officer from personal liability. Justice Kagan led off the questioning, putting forth a hypothetical. Namely, if the court concludes that the gang paraphernalia provision of the warrant violates clearly established law, but not the firearms provision, what difference would that make to the case? And the basic response from the United States was that that wouldn't change the scope of the search, that everything that had been permitted by the firearms provision of the search warrant would have allowed for the same sort of search that could occur because of the gang paraphernalia search. There wasn't, in fact, any seizure of any materials under the gang paraphernalia provision, only under the firearms provision. Justice Scalia followed up with additional questions along that same line and received more detailed responses. Justice Alito and Justice Scalia also asked questions indicating a reluctance to deny qualified immunity when an attorney, the deputy district attorney, and a magistrate judge had both approved the warrant. Paul Wolfson, counsel for the Millenders, was closely questioned by Chief Justice Roberts, as well as Justices Alito, Breyer, and Kennedy, as to the circumstances under which Mr. Wolfson believes that police officers could legitimately seize firearms when they were not the firearms that were used in the assault under investigation. They seemed to be concerned that Mr. Wolfson's argument about the warrant would indicate that it would be impossible to seize any firearms discovered during the actual search of the premises if they were not the actual firearm, the sawed-off shotgun, that was used in the assault. Justice Sotomayor, in turn, asked Mr. Wolfson whether the offending provisions of the warrant expanded the scope of the search. Mr. Wolfson argued that it did not matter whether they extended the scope of the search, and that if one provision was invalid, it meant there was a constitutional violation and the Millenders should be permitted to bring suit. The questioning did not give a clear indication as to the basis for the court's eventual ruling, but the general tenor of the questioning indicated that most of the justices believe that the officers should receive qualified immunity on the search and seizure of the firearms found in the residence. Some justices, like Justices Alito and Scalia, indicated sympathy with the plight of officers who rely on the decisions of magistrate judges, who presumably know the intricacies of the law better than police officers. Justices Kagan and Scalia's questioning would indicate that there is support for granting qualified immunity on the firearms provision, but holding that an overly broad gang paraphernalia provision is irrelevant because it did not expand the scope of the search. It was only Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg, and possibly Justice Breyer, who indicated any support for the claim by the Millenders that the general prohibition on general warrants was sufficiently specific to overcome Messerschmidt's and Lawrence's entitlement to qualified immunity. For now, though, we'll just have to wait until sometime next year for the final decision.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.